I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today on the Morning Show, we will listen back about New York Governor Kathy Hochul's first State of the State speech she gave earlier in the week. We'll hear two opinions about that speech. One, Blair Horner, the executive director of NYPERG, talks about Hochul's opinions on higher education, ethics reform, and the environment. And then we'll hear from Peter Lavinia, the co-chair of the Green Party of New York. He'll talk about issues like single-payer health care, housing, climate, criminal justice, and ballot access. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you. Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Delmar Wellness Center of Alachua, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Andrea Macko is reporting for Porcupine Soup that the Greene County Legislature held its annual organizational meeting January 3rd and included on its agenda swearing in new and returning lawmakers, making 2022 appointments, and approving the first pay raise for county lawmakers in 15 years. In an 11-2 vote, legislators approved a 25% salary increase for themselves, bringing their annual pay to $18,750. Quote, the annual salary for members of the Greene County Legislature has not been updated since 2006 and is in need of adjustment to match cumulative average employee salary increases over the past 15 years, unquote, the resolution stated. Republicans Michael Bullock of Catskill and Thomas Hobart of Coxsackie were the only dissenting votes. Quote, I don't think we should be in the business of voting ourselves pay raises, unquote, said Bullock, adding that county residents should get to decide on the increase in the 2022 general election. Quote, we are serving them, and I think that is how we should handle this, unquote, he said. The legislators also voted to reappoint Republican Patrick Linger of New Baltimore to serve as their chair through 2024. Those in leadership receive additional pay. The chair gets an additional $8,400 per year, while the majority leader, Republican Matthew Lavera of Catskill, and minority leader, Democrat Harry Lennon of Cairo, are paid an additional $1,250 each. Republican Greg Davis of Greenville will serve as parliamentarian in 2022. Republican Charles Martinez of Coxsackie was reappointed budget officer through 2024. Jonathan Palmer was reappointed Greene County historian for 1 year, and Angelo Scaturo was reappointed to a 3-year term as the full-time public defender. The Times Union and the Mountain Eagle were approved as the official newspapers of Greene County for the publication of printed local laws, notices, and other matters required by law to be published. Noticeably missing from the meeting was Jack Keller of Catskill. In November, he was elected to his second term on the legislature, but Keller died unexpectedly of heart failure on December 30th. Keller's seat will be filled by appointment. Lavera said the Catskill Republican Committee will meet and then submit a recommendation to the full legislature for consideration later this month. More about this story at porcupinesoup.com.
Catskill schools on January 6th moved to remote learning through at least January 14th due to COVID-19. They began the remote learning with a 2-hour delay. Dr. Ronnell Cook, the superintendent of the Catskill schools, wrote in an online message, and I quote, "The reason for the shift to remote instruction is a high number of positive cases being reported at the high school, and the shift applies to CHS students only. Students will log in to their classes as they did last year. They can use a Chromebook or log in to their Google account and use a Chrome browser on another device. Students should also check their emails for further instruction from their teachers," end quote. The day before, Albany City Schools announced they were closing through the MLK holiday, too, because of so many COVID-19 cases. The new case counts are skyrocketing through the Hudson Valley, so more announcements from schools may be coming.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that a law enforcement labor union blames staffing shortages for the mental health crisis its members are dealing with, the PBA of New York State said January 5th. The union's president urged Governor Kathy Hochul and state lawmakers to address the problem in the middle of ongoing concerns about overcompensation. The union represents the New York State Park Police, New York State University Police, and NCON officers and forest rangers from the State Department of Environmental Conservation. Quote, "We're losing officers every day across the state to local police departments that provide better retirement benefits and compensation, and that's creating serious staffing and experience shortages that will prevent us from being able to respond to people experiencing mental health crises," unquote, said PBA of New York State President Manny Villar. "At issue are staffing levels brought on in part by contracts and pay disparity between officers in the PBA's agencies and local law enforcement, as well as poor recruitment, failure to run academy classes, and an antiquated retirement system," according to the union. The labor union's push comes as the state budget season is set to start in Albany, with Hochul scheduled to release her first spending proposal in the coming weeks. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting that the Dutchess County Jail has been closed to the public since January 1st because of an increase in COVID infections among inmates and corrections officers. Jail Administrator Teresa Lee said that as of January 6th, the jail had 176 male and 21 female inmates, with 76 of those inmates testing positive for COVID-19. And 149 inmates are either quarantined or in medical isolation. Currently, 39 of 165 full-time corrections officers and 20 part-time officers are out sick with coronavirus. Acting Dutchess County Sheriff Kirk Imperati said, and I quote, "The safety and security of our staff and inmate population is our first priority. We want to keep everyone and their families healthy and safe as we see a spike in COVID cases," end quote. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News.
Ted Remsnyder is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the village of Hunter has received a $1.97 million state grant to relocate its firehouse outside of the 100-year and 500-year flood hazard areas of the Schoharie Creek. As part of the statewide initiative, the State Department of Environmental Conservation this week awarded $11 million in funds as part of the Climate Smart Communities Grant Program. The Hunter Project was the only proposal in Greene County to receive money in this funding round. Quote, "We've needed a new firehouse for decades," unquote, Hunter Village Mayor Alan Higgins said. Quote, "Since we did the local flood analysis, some things were identified in the village that would be helpful with our flood zones. One of them was to replace the bridge on Bridge Street, and we see that as a real major need for the village as well," unquote. The award is a 50% matching grant, which will cover half of the cost of the $3.8 million firehouse project. Quote, "The property that we're looking at that's in the grant has since pulled out of that deal," unquote, Higgins said. Quote, "So we're actively searching for a property now. It's just a little wrench in the gears. We needed to move that firehouse, so we applied for that grant, and it's amazing that we got it. It's a competitive grant, so there were no guarantees there," unquote. The mayor said the village will reconvene its relocation committee in the next 2 weeks with the intent of identifying a new property for the project. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
Mike Goodwin and Shanice Holmes Brown report in the Times Union that Albany County announced a new record of COVID-19 cases January 6th with 1,010 new positive tests. That is a new single-day record for Albany County, passing the December 31st total of 1,003 new cases. Albany County Executive Dan McCoy said in a statement, and I quote, "This is the highest we've ever seen in Albany County since the pandemic started, and the second time daily cases broke into the thousands in the last week. To put that number in perspective, the largest single-day increase we recorded last winter was 351, and this goes to show you just how contagious the Omicron variant is," end quote. Albany County has announced another death from coronavirus, a woman in her 30s. The only good news from Albany County on January 6th, hospitalizations dropped by 10 cases, with 99 people currently in the hospital and 12 people are in intensive care units. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Sarah Tadeo reports in the Democratic Chronicle that mobile sports betting in New York begins January 8th. The New York State Gaming Commission announced January 6th that Caesars Sportsbook, DraftKings, FanDuel, and Rush Street Interactive have been approved to begin accepting wagers. Five other operators are still working to meet statutory and regulatory requirements necessary to launch. State Senator Joseph Adabo Jr., a Democrat from Queens who has championed sports betting, said January 6th that it was, quote, "great news for New York in terms of revenue, new funding for education, addiction programs, and youth sports, as well as new jobs," unquote. Sports betting has been legal in New York since 2019, but only at four casinos: Resorts World Catskills, Del Lago in the Finger Lakes, Rivers in Schenectady, and Tioga Downs in the Southern Tier. Now, anyone with a smartphone or computer can make a bet inside the state. New York's neighbors, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut also legalized sports betting recently. Read more about this story in the Democrat and Chronicle.
Natasha Von Holdridge is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Columbia County Emergency Management Office is no longer a part of the Sheriff's Office. The Columbia County Board of Supervisors, January 3rd, approved a resolution transitioning the EMO from a department under the control of the County Sheriff's Office to an independent agency. That organizational structure had been in effect since the EMO was established in 2011. The vote this week now puts the office under the control of the Board of Supervisors Chairman Matt Murrell. The Stockport Republican said, and I quote, "We did have several meetings with the sheriff-elect, and we did have discussions to try to answer everyone's questions. That was a month and a half that we delayed this," end quote. The timing of the resolution coming so close to the election of new Sheriff Donald Kraft drew the concern of several supervisors. Supervisors took a roll call vote on the resolution. The resolution passed using the board's weighted vote provision and is based on the population of each municipality. According to the weighted vote point scale, the resolution carried with a final tally of 2,191 in favor and 1,344 against. According to Roger Hannigan Gilson, writing in the Times Union, Kraft, a Democrat, is opposed to the change. Kraft said after the vote, and I quote, "I'm still in opposition to that move, and that will continue until the end of time. I don't have enough data here to support it, and I haven't been afforded the opportunity to review any data. Today's literally my first day in office, end quote. Kraft said his office would be following up to determine if there are, and I quote, any violations about how this was done, end quote. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, snow is likely before 1 p.m., then isolated snow showers after 2 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 32 degrees. Friday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 14 degrees. And on Saturday, sunny with a high near 29 degrees. And a slight chance of snow after 1 a.m. on Saturday night. It will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 19 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You will hear all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Friday, January 7th at WGXC 90.7 FM. Including at 10 a.m., it's time for the Global Agogo Show, looking back at international musicians who passed away last year, including Alemesho Eshetti, Johnny Pacheco, and Victor Uafio. Then at noon, Jared Wigashute is back live in Hudson with the Sugar Shack Jukebox after the local news at noon. He'll be on until 2 p.m. playing funk, R&B, rock, pop, psych, and more, much of it brand new music. And at 2 p.m. we'll hear Theodore the Blacksmith as the featured artist on the Data Cult audio show. Then at 4 p.m. we are live with radio artists from around the world with the latest edition of the Conduction Series. The prompt is Change Winds Today with a live improvisation with artists August Black, Jason Sanford, Max Goldfarb, Andy DeLalo, Anna Frizz, Nima Burundi, Paulus Van Horn, and Martin Freeman, among others. At 6 p.m., we're live with the teens from Clubhouse Radio on Main Street in Catskill. And then at 7 p.m., we head to Hudson and hear from other teens about what they've been reading on the Bound by Books show, sponsored by the Hudson Area Library. At 10 p.m., we're back in Hudson again with club, techno, house, and experimental music from Guy Welchek on his Guy and Friends show on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
The Catskill High School Interact Club has scheduled its Martin Luther King March for Peace and Justice for February 17th. The event meets at the Second Baptist Church in Catskill at 5 p.m. Then a candlelight march starts at 5:15 p.m. The group will march from the Second Baptist Church, that's at Upper Main Street on Catskill, to the Greene County Courthouse, to the Catskill Middle School lawn. That is, again, the Martin Luther King March for Peace and Justice, February 17th, organized by the Catskill High School Interact Club. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about this event and many other community events in your area.
Hey, this is Andy, host of Crawl Out from the Fallout with Raven Sings the Blues. The show is a monthly roundup of new music, plumbing psych, folk, cosmic Americana, indie, garage, and exploratory titles alongside enough classic gems to hold it all together like glue. You can tune into the show every second Tuesday of the month from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, January 7th. Early this morning, it is snowy. Temperature ranges from 21 degrees in Mackey to 27 degrees in Kingston. We're looking at about another half inch to inch of snow will fall this morning, depending on your location. It will taper off around 10 a.m. Unfortunately, you may not notice because about that time, wind gusts are expected, so blowing snow and sudden roadway snowdrifts will be possible. Use caution out there and add a little extra time to travel plans because a lot of people will be realizing they need new tires today. Speaking of, theoretically, you should have good tires on all of your wheels, but some of us have budgets and sometimes our tires aren't always perfect. For the sake of safety, ensure the tires with the most tread are at the back of the vehicle. Granted, starting on a slick surface might not be the easiest, but when stopping and while driving, it lowers your chances of skidding a lot. A high of 33 is expected at 1 p.m. Overnight, clouds will clear out and temperatures will fall to 16 degrees. Drafty spaces will feel it more as winds will be stiff and regular. Saturday will be dry and freezing cold with light winds and a high temperature of 28 degrees at 1 p.m. 24 degrees overnight takes us into a still messy looking Sunday. So far, as of today, Friday, it looks like freezing rain will hit early, causing some dangerous travel conditions. Then it turns to rain and or snow with wind gusts and a high of 36 degrees happening just after dark. Overnight, some snow will fall and Monday will be freezing cold but dry. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:38 a.m., then high tide at 6:40 a.m., low tide again at 12:54 p.m., and high tide again at 6:55 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 34 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:25 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:19 a.m. Looking way up, we see two far side ultraviolet hotspots on the sun that can rotate into view this weekend could fire off some solar flares. If so, radio and GPS activity can be affected without notice. Solar wind speed is currently 446 kilometers per second at 3.2 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 18 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board, and even good conditions will be available below 8 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1, quiet. The current sunspot number is 35. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. And if you have any questions or suggestions, please send them to weather@wgxe.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Amanda Lees of Freehold, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Please assist us in the transmission. Please assist us in the transmission.
That was Charles Mingus with Hog Callin' Blues.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Welcome to the phone-in. Today we have on our panel our resident psychiatrist, a psychiatrist who isn't resident but is staying with the other one because he can't bear to go home, and a psychiatrist who has lived with the first one, but who, when the second one arrived, felt alienated and since has undergone a total personality change. Our subject tonight is farming, and our first caller is from Reading.
Hello?
Hello, welcome to Phone-In. What's your question to the panel?
You're through now.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello there, this is Phone-In. What is your question?
Is Vic there?
Is Vic there? Is Vic there, Dr. Rogers?
Well, the problem here is a simple one. The caller wants to know if Vic is there. And in this case, Vic, as far as I can tell...
Can I chip in here, Alan?
Yes, of course.
I agree with what Rogers was going to say. As far as we can tell, Vic isn't here. The only thing she can do is to keep calling, and if Vic comes in, we'll let her know.
Does that answer your question?
Hello?
Hello?
Vic?
Yeah?
Good evening, sir. Welcome to Phone In. What's your question?
It's Norman.
Hello, Norman. Welcome to the show. What's your question on farming?
Has he been round again?
Has he been round again? Professor Rogers?
Well, I...
Oh, no.
Professor Dibbs?
But he's been phoning me.
I think we've proved that Vic isn't here.
Bloody kill him.
And therefore, he couldn't have come round again. It's a fairly simple case of non-presence.
Thank you, Norman. I hope that answers your question.
I'll go round there and kill him. Is he down a pub?
I'm sorry, Norman. Only one question per caller. And now we move on to our next caller, please, on farming.
Hello. My name is Mummy Badger.
Get on with the question.
Yes, I farm over 4,000 acres, and I'd like to know the panel's attitude to the viability of cereal production in the EEC.
I'm sorry, we only want questions about farming. Next caller, please.
Hello.
Hello, it's Mr. Gannett from Dorchester, isn't it?
Dead.
Oh, dear.
But he left me his question in his will.
Oh, dear. Well, how sad, but let's hear the question.
Unfortunately, one of the conditions of the will is that I myself should not reveal the question.
Oh, dear. Well, can someone else reveal it?
Yes, he left provision.
I'm sorry, we're running out of time.
Yes, he left provision in the will that his wife should be able to reveal the question in certain circumstances.
Is she there?
Yes.
Well, perhaps she could read the question on farming, please.
Well, she's here, but she's not very well.
Well, is she well enough to read the question?
No, I wouldn't think so.
Well, is there anyone there who can read the late Mr. Gannett's question?
Only if the executors of the will were to agree on a revocation of the clause by applying for a codicil.
Well, I'm afraid we must leave that question there.
It could be rushed through in about 2 months.
Well, I'm afraid, I'm sorry, that's all we've got time for.
Hey, today I noticed you had a show on this January 4th, 2022. There was mention about the January 6th anniversary of the insurrection, and the first thing I'm surprised about that you guys didn't have any call-in arrangements for people to come in and give their reflections. Now, I feel this is an important point to mention. Now, as we all know, our government practices separation of church and state. Now, the thing I wanted to bring out is anyone involved from the president on up to the voters who stormed the Capitol are in major, major trouble because our system does not practice what is commonly done as far as sinning and then being forgiven. Our system is unforgivable. And a lot of people who did that nonsense, it'll come back to eat them. Now, as far as what I feel about the show was pretty good, but like I said, there was no calling. And I'm very surprised about that. Now, I do feel that there should be a special emphasis on having discussions as to the constitutionality of where this thing has gone since what happened last year in January 6th. Based on the Constitution, there are a lot of people who are in big trouble. I mean, the problem that happened back when McCarthy had his hearings, this is going to be substantially a lot more damaging because we have proof of all sorts, even the courts, backed up Biden's winning. Now, I do feel that it is very important that the staff revolve around the issue of the Constitution, as controversial as it is. Remember, our government does not cater to sin and forgiving of sins. Anything that anyone does wrong in government is guaranteed punishment that will follow whoever the offense party is to the end of time. That's what our Constitution is partially. Hi, I had made a previous call. I just wanted to conclude that this is what our Constitution is about. Now, basically, when we get into politics in our country, the rule is we have to become living saints. For those of us who are believers about Jesus, we have to outshine the Messiah. For those people who are practitioners of Islam, they must outshine the Prophet Muhammad. That's how our system is set. And evidently, what we've seen since last year, there's a big problem and it's going to be dealt with. Now, I have to make this short because I have a tendency to be a little long-winded, but I just wanted to make that matter known. Ciao for now and Happy New Year.
My name is Andrew Mady. You are about to hear a sound collage called 10 that I made in honor of WGXC's 10th anniversary. Enjoy. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
4, 5, 6,
1,
7,
2,
8,
3, 4,
9,
5,
10,
6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
1, 2, 3,
1,
4,
2, 3,
5,
4,
6,
5,
7,
6, 7,
8,
8,
9,
10.
10.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
7, 8, 9,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4,
9,
5,
10,
6,
7,
8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3,
4,
5, 6,
7,
8, 9, 10.
1,
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3,
1,
4, 5,
2,
6,
3,
8, 4,
9,
10.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
He's not just a former president. He's a defeated former president. Defeated by a margin of over 7 million of your votes.
President Joe Biden marked the one-year anniversary of the attack on the Capitol by calling out former President Trump yesterday for fomenting anger over the election and rhetoric Democrats and some Republicans say spurred violence. Trump responded to Biden's speech, calling it, quote, political theater. Attorney General Merrick Garland said Thursday more than 725 people have been arrested and charged for actions related to the January 6th insurrection.
The actions we have taken thus far will not be our last. The Justice Department remains committed to holding all January 6th perpetrators at any level accountable under law.
Meanwhile, at a news conference, Republican Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene spoke about the plight of pretrial detainees allegedly involved in the attack last year.
No one is defending these people. They are languishing in jail. They're awaiting their trials. Many of their trials are much later on.
A Washington Post poll found 58% of Republicans don't accept Biden's election as legitimate. And Republican-led legislative chambers in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin continue to investigate alleged malfeasance in the 2020 election. The Supreme Court hears oral arguments today on the Biden administration's COVID-19 vaccine mandate for healthcare workers at facilities receiving federal funding. Indiana Republican Senator Mike Braun and many of his colleagues continue to oppose employer mandates.
That is the heavy hand of government. That is overreach. And that is when my phone started ringing off the hook.
Several former health advisors to the White House have published a series of op-eds in the Journal of the American Medical Association, calling on President Biden to adopt a new pandemic strategy that accepts living with the virus as the new normal. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
The president's focus and objective now is to save as many lives as possible, and we know what works.
The number of new COVID cases more than tripled over the past 2 weeks, shattering records, driven by the Omicron variant. Finally, lawyers for convicted sex trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell have asked a federal judge for a new trial after two jurors revealed they were survivors of sexual abuse. Maxwell faces up to 65 years in prison for helping Jeffrey Epstein recruit and sexually assault teenage girls. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined today by Blair Horner, who's part of our show on the Governor Hochul's State of the State address on Wednesday. And Blair, of course, is executive director of NYPERG. Many issues that NYPERG would be interested in the governor's proposals, State of the State. But let's start off with ethics, both the idea of overhauling, getting rid of J-COPE, and also term limits, which I think NYPERG's not been particularly supportive of in the past. But what do you see as the good parts of the ethics proposals?
Well, I mean, you mentioned the term limits issue. NYPERG hasn't had a position on that. So, you know, we don't blow hot or cold over it. I mean, I thought the governor's sort of reaction, the ethics package, was a reaction to her predecessor. She called for term limits for the executive branch, not the legislative branch, for two terms. That's directly, you know, reacting to former Governor Cuomo's efforts to get a fourth term. She said there would be a ban on outside income on the executive branch. And while, you know, the executive branch members are full time, they're not supposed to have outside income. The former governor was able to strong arm his way through and get two book deals that totaled upwards to $6 million that he could stick in his pocket. And then she proposed to eliminate the Joint Commission on Public Ethics and replace it with a new entity. The Joint Commission on Public Ethics was the brainchild of the former governor. And so in many ways, she was the anti-Cuomo when it came to ethics. And since her predecessor resigned as a result of scandal, it made sense that she would do that. The Joint Commission on Public Ethics replacing it, you know, of course, the devil's in the details on all of these things, but on that one, it's particularly important because she's proposing to replace it with some body whose the commission of which would be consisting of members of law schools on some sort of rotating basis. She said 5 members rotating among the 15 biggest law schools in the state. Now, how that's going to happen, I don't know. These law school deans are, you know, of course, they have their own interests. They work for institutions that have business before the government and that rely on state support to some extent. And they're all involved in lobbying of the state legislature and the executive branch. You know, the new entity, I think, although we don't know for sure, is going to be regulating the lobbying industry. So how she is going to organize it so that those individuals are politically insulated and are independent, I think, is really sort of the test. But she met the goals of getting rid of, that she has established for herself, of blowing up J-COPE, as she described it, and replacing it with an entity that is not run by the political elite of Albany. But the details matter. So, right. You know, I thought it was, you know, it was an interesting idea. We'll see how it all works out.
Well, I will just quickly note that as a law student at Albany Law School, we got a new dean, and he came in and unilaterally killed NYPERG at the Albany Law School without any due process. And when the Student Bar Association tried to oppose it, he said he would destroy the Student Bar Association if they put NYPERG back on campus.
That was in the age of the dinosaurs roaming the earth, right, Mark, when you were in law school?
Well, Dick Gottfried was in the assembly at that point.
A fellow dinosaur.
And I'll just quickly note that, you know, the Daily News today did take on Hochul for not addressing, for instance, the massive donation, $69,700, that can go to gubernatorial candidates, statewide candidates. But what about education, higher education? What's in the budget on that? Or, I'm sorry, state of the state on that?
Well, again, you know, the devil really is in the details on that one, too, because the higher education sector in New York State is teetering on the financial brink in many cases. The big university centers, both the public ones and the independent sector ones, are doing reasonably well. But the four-year public comprehensive colleges, they're called, the two-year community colleges, and many of the small four-year liberal arts independent colleges that don't have big endowments, they're all suffering. And there have been some small independent colleges, for example, that have closed shop. And so the governor talked a lot about dealing with higher education. And, you know, on the public sector side, one of the ways that part of the problem is they've had these hemorrhaging enrollments. And part of that's demographic, right? So 18 to 24-year-olds, there's fewer and fewer of them in New York. New York is aging. And so some of our ideas were, for example, to reform the state's financial assistance program to make it easier for part-time students to get financial assistance. And that's a way to bring in a new demographic to public and private colleges. What they all need is an infusion of state support. And while she spent a lot of time talking about it in terms of creating flagship institutions at University of Buffalo and Stony Brook, both public universities, they're doing reasonably well financially. And she didn't really spend a lot of time on the sort of big school issues. But she also talked about, reinstituting financial assistance for incarcerated individuals, which again could help bring in new enrollment. Incarcerated individuals used to be able to get financial aid in New York State, and that was stopped during the Pataki administration. We think that's a good idea because the recidivism rate for people with college degrees is lower, not surprisingly, than the rate is for people that don't have college degrees. And so we think it makes public policy sense if you're trying to make sure that people don't come back after they've served their time. We thought that made sense. But again, sort of the big ticket items deal with financial aid to the institutions as well as the students. She didn't really talk that much about that. One interesting idea that she put into the mix, though, sort of related to this, was that she supports legislation to place polling places on college campuses, to require that polling places be based on college campuses. We've long advocated for that. We thought that was a good idea, and that could make a big difference, I think, in terms of representation in the legislative process by young adults, as well as making it easier for those people to get civically engaged at a younger age. So there was, of course, State of the State addresses, Mark, as you well know, are long on rhetoric and short on substance. That's typically the way it is, and this was no different. And the sort of the prose part of the poetry of governing really shows up in the state's budget address, which is in a couple of weeks.
Right. So we have about 2 minutes left. Obviously, NYPIRG does a lot on the environment. Didn't see anything about the 40th anniversary of the Obama bill, which NYPIRG really championed, though I hear it may be in the budget. A lot on climate. What were some of your highlight takeaways on the environment in 2 minutes?
I think the governor made it clear that the state's policy direction with both regard to its housing stock and its transportation system is a reliance on electricity and moving off of fossil fuels as sort of a way. I mean, she talked about changing the housing code to make it more likely that buildings will be relying on electricity and not hookups to natural gas. She talked a lot about the need for new electric vehicle hookups. She had signed legislation last year that said that there'd be a sale of new fossil fuel powered cars by the year 2035. And so she made some real, I thought, significant steps toward that. And that were sort of interesting and I thought innovative approaches. You're right about the solid waste issues. She talked a lot about making the producers be responsible for paying for recycling, not taxpayers. But she didn't apply that to the oil and gas industries who are pumping pollution into the atmosphere and are doing it in a way that is causing a climate catastrophe. So hopefully that will improve, that prospect will improve when she unveils her budget.
In the last minute, any other, particularly NYPIRG concerns in the state of the state?
I thought it was interesting speech. It was the first time a woman gave it. She gave it in the assembly chamber, which again was a clear difference from her immediate predecessor. And yet it was unique in the sense there was hardly anybody in the room. And I think if for anybody to give a speech without any sort of audience feedback makes it tougher. But I thought she did a, you know, she made a competent presentation and given the circumstances, did a good job.
Well, we've been talking with Blair Horner, Executive Director of New York Public Interest Research Group. I believe it's NYPIRG.org. Okay. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. Joined by Peter Lavigne, the co-chair of the Green Party of New York State. And we're talking about Governor Hochul's State of the State address, her first woman governor. So Peter, what were some of your key takeaways, things you were perhaps hoping to hear and did not hear about?
I was hoping to hear that Governor Hochul would come out in support of single-payer universal health care in New York State and say she was going to include the New York Health Act in her budget. Didn't hear that. I was hoping for a more robust proposal on climate. Didn't hear that. I was hoping to hear more on good government and ballot access reform, and there was very little on that. She talked about housing, but not at the level that we need talked about or discussing the rent moratorium, and very little about criminal justice reform. She seemed to be avoiding that issue. So, you know, I think the speech was disappointing in how little it really talked about and how far it did not go.
Now, you mentioned healthcare. She did put, I believe, $10 billion on the table over 5 years for increased investment in healthcare, but no, that's not universal single-payer healthcare. And of course, one of the big advantages of single-payer healthcare is that actually you would save tens of billions of dollars annually on healthcare costs by eliminating all the waste from private health insurance.
Yeah. And, you know, not only that, we've seen during this pandemic what, ease of access to care can do when you can go and you can get a vaccination, when you can get a test and not worry about payment. You know, these are things that ease access and actually produce good results. We're in the middle of, you know, the worst pandemic in a century, and she's not talking about single-payer healthcare, which really needs to be on the table. I think especially this year, Richard Gottfried, who's championed the bill for years, is retiring. This would be, a great year to push it. She could do something really amazing in her, first year as governor, taking over for Cuomo as she's running for re-election, but unfortunately she chose not to.
Now, she did include